Welcome to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock, and I'll tell you how LeBron just found a way to diminish Michael Jordan's legacy.
And I'm Colin Cowherd, and I'll tell you what everybody's missing about this John Gruden-Khalil Mack feud. Speak for yourself. On a Tuesday, Whitlock is back. Starts right now. Where were you?
I can't wait to hear your explanation on this Gruden-Khalil Mack. All right, hello and welcome. We're joined today by a couple of longtime NBA players, Jim Jackson and Eddie House. Let's start with LeBron James, who finally started talking to the media again this week after a prolonged silence following his move to Los Angeles. And while James did some interviews about his move west, he actually went on CNN and had some things far more interesting to say.
Would you ever run for office?
Run for office?
Would you ever run? Would you ever be a politician or run for office?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I sit here and say I don't think so. I don't know.
I'm being serious. If someone tried to recruit a LeBron to run for president, they said, listen, they've got no one. If you don't run, Trump's going to win. Would you run?
Well, in that case, I may. Yeah, if they have no one, yeah. I believe there's some people out there. I hope.
But if there's no one.
Let's see first.
But you would run.
Let's see first.
All right, Cowherd. LeBron had some other interesting things to say. He's got his beard looking like Abe Lincoln. is it smart for LeBron to dive into politics?
Yeah, because it works for his brand more than an athlete. This is what his brand's becoming. You know, MJ was about shoes. LeBron's about more than that. Secondly, it works for his league. His commissioner's for it. The fans aren't appalled by it. So, you know, I think for his brand and his league, it's pretty seamless. You know, I've always thought about this. He's already been in politics. He was the mayor of Cleveland, and he's the king of the NBA. So he's been in these situations where he has been tied to economies of the league, television deals. He's been tied to Cleveland's economy. He's working at a macro level above basketball and has been for the last decade.
Politics is the most dangerous sport that's played in America. And it's more dangerous than football. It's more dangerous than CTE. It's a blood sport. And so I would tell him to be very careful because, you know, people don't seem to forget history. You know, Donald Trump was very popular in America, very popular with black people, very popular with rappers. He got into politics. And the next thing you know, he became the most racist person in the history of America. That's politics. Politics is a death sport, and people try to assassinate your character. And so there's a lot of things that when you're just an athlete or when you're not fully engaged in politics that get overlooked, but your enemies don't overlook anything in politics, and they will try to bring you down and tear you down any way possible. So I just say sometimes be careful what you wish for.
I think that's why it's better for LeBron to use his platform to be the kingmaker instead of the king, to be behind the scenes, to be able to use his influence to make change. Because like you said, once you get out there on the political scene, everything is coming up. They're digging into your personal history, your past history, and they're going to use that against you. I think LeBron can utilize his star power, his political clout, his money, and more importantly, his connections behind the scenes to get things done. And when something jumps off and he needs to speak and do something, he can do it. I think he'll actually be more powerful in that aspect, Eddie, from doing it not embolden or beholden to a political party.
Yeah, well, you know, LeBron is one of those guys that seems like you can never go against him or doubt anything that he wants to do. It seems like he'll succeed at it no matter what it is. He has a fantastic team around him. He has a bunch of supporters, people that love him because of the things he's done in the community. Now, I hear what you guys are saying, that once you get into that political field, that is no holds barred. All the layers are going to get peeled back, and they're going to go as deep as they can to try to find whatever they can. If he feels strongly about it and this is something that he feels like he can do, I don't see why not. It wouldn't be a smart move. If it's something that you want to do and you believe strongly in it, you have to go after it. That's the smart move. If you believe in something strong and don't go do it, that would be the dumb move. So if he really believes strongly in that he has an opportunity, because we could look at some of these former players, you know, Kevin Johnson was the mayor of Sacramento.
Right.
And if Jesse the Body Ventura, I was watching him wrestle, and then I'm watching him shoot the Predator. If he could become the governor in Minnesota, this guy LeBron, I think, can do whatever he wants to do. And if he wants to become the president of the United States, look at Donald Trump. a reality TV star, a real estate mogul is able to do it, I see why he wouldn't be able
LeBron's
to be successful.
LeBron's already, you can be political and not a politician. He's already political. And some of this is, you know, you're single without children. I'm married with kids. You have a little more time than I do. Football demands 6 times more practice than the actual game. Basketball doesn't. You rarely practice as an NBA veteran. LeBron's got time. So people are saying, you know, LeBron's distracted. LeBron doesn't practice. I mean, it's well known.
He plays 82 games.
No, okay, 82 games, but they don't practice. LeBron doesn't practice. That was a knock on him in Cleveland. They couldn't get the chemistry right because LeBron doesn't practice. A football player, you practice all day for 2.5, 3 hours on Sunday. Some of this is just LeBron reacting to Don Lemon, LeBron reacting to a question. Once the season starts, he tends to button it up.
LeBron does no interviews without it being prearranged. You know the questions, you know the whole deal. Look, my issue is LeBron right now is being covered by a very fawning media. We all have spent the past 48 hours pretending like he's the first athlete to open a school, and he's just not. Andre Agassi did it, Jalen Rose has done it, David Robinson's done it. There's a fawning media. LeBron can do no wrong. LeBron's the greatest thing in the world. Once you step into the political realm, even behind the scenes, that fawning media goes away and people start asking tough questions. Don Lemon's not going to do it because that's not what he does. But eventually people will. And so I see LeBron, and this is what I always thought this move to L.A. was about, is him becoming an icon and a tastemaker, which Jim was kind of pointing to, a kingmaker, a tastemaker. And if you just think it through, the Democratic Party lost Ohio. It's a swing state. It's very important to win the presidency. And LeBron James supported Hillary Clinton. They're trying to build LeBron up so that 2, 3 years from down, when he throws his support behind whoever's opposing Trump, that it has more impact. This is the Speak for Yourself podcast. I'm Jason Whitlock. And before the show moves along, I want to tell you today's show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring, posting your position to job sites, and waiting for the right people to see it? ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/speak. That's ZipRecruiter.com/speak. ZipRecruiter.com/SPEAK. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show.
Well, running for office isn't the only form of public service LeBron is interested in. With King James opening his long-awaited I Promise School in Akron this week, while LeBron is still chasing Michael Jordan ghost on the court. Off the court's different. A story as the Big Lead writes, quote, if we're tallying up all life's achievements, on-court success, brand building, wealth accumulation, and empowering the success of friends, family, and those who are less fortunate, LeBron, whose public school in Akron opens today, has already crept ahead of MJ. Whitlock, does LeBron's off-court endeavors actually diminish Michael Jordan's legacy?
I think it's a great question. I think it's a fair question. I just want more information. I want to see things play out. When you get involved in the educational system like he is, there's success and there's also failure. Schools fail. He's in bed with the Akron public school system. These things can fall apart and not work. If this school is successful and he continues to have other successes, I think it does a little bit diminish Michael Jordan's. But I want to see it play out because, you know, some, I guarantee you Michael Jordan can list his charitable accomplishments, and I guarantee you they're very, very impressive. He's just a little less public about them. And some people don't want to put their face on things mm-hmm. they're not experts in. Mm-hmm. They prefer, oh, you're involved in the educational system, let me support you and what you're doing from behind the scenes rather than putting my face on everything.
Yeah, Michael and LeBron are different personalities. And Michael was always a little bit of a taker. He punched a teammate. He abandoned his sport twice. I'm not going to... Well, he quit his sport twice.
Abandoned his
sport? Well, time out.
Man's got a right to do whatever he wants to do in terms
never
of
gave
work.
His team a head up. Right before camp, I'm out. By the way, told his...
He that
told
sounds it, like the decision.
Told his trainer, Tim Grover, 6 months earlier, I'm leaving basketball. Wouldn't tell his teammates. Wouldn't tell the front office. Wouldn't tell his coach. Michael's been about Michael. You can burrow Mike's legacy down to 6 for 6. LeBron's like magic. He's more of a giver. He gets in politics. He's got his school. Their personalities are different. They're different human beings. LeBron's always been magic. Magic is offended if you move to LA and don't say, hey, help me in business. Mm-hmm. Magic's offended by it. If you went to Michael and said, help me in business, he'd say, get out of my face. This is my town. They're different guys.
They are, but I think it's because of, look at the backgrounds. Michael Jordan, he comes from a stable family, mother, father, sibling, brother, sister. LeBron didn't have that stability when he was young, didn't know his father. His mom moved from place to place. He grew up in the central city of Akron, Ohio. The public school system probably wasn't his best. So he had all these challenges growing mm-hmm. up. So for him, the fuel to the fire was, okay, if I make it, it's certain things I'm going to do to give back to my community. Not saying that Mike didn't have it, but he didn't have it to that extreme. So the thought process for LeBron is totally different. I don't think it diminishes anything Michael Jordan will do or has done. I think it just enriches how we view currently LeBron James, because he is what we're going to look at as athletes moving forward. I think you made a great point. Jalen Rose did a school. But he's not LeBron James, or he's not getting the same cover.
Right.
Andre Agassi did a school, but they're not LeBron James. So to me, the things that he wants to do and will continue to do, not taking away from Michael Jordan. Michael did a lot of things that people don't know about, and that's the way he wanted it. LeBron happens to be in the digital age, the media age, when things are going on. So everything he does is going to be highlighted, good or bad. And I just don't think it takes away from what MJ did or didn't do.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point, that it doesn't diminish MJ's legacy at all, because I think MJ's legacy is set in stone. It's not like you could try to rewrite his legacy because somebody else is doing something. It's already set what he did and how he went about doing it. I just think this, what LeBron is doing, is helping his legacy. It's taking him from being like Jordan doing things on the under where nobody really knows that he's helping the community or anything, like where LeBron is on the forefront of it and is the face of it. And you look at that situation, it puts LeBron in the level of Muhammad Ali, being a philanthropist and going out and being in the community and helping people that are at risk, kids and things like that. So I think it elevates, it doesn't do anything to Michael Jordan's legacy, but I think it elevates LeBron's legacy.
I don't want to put any sort of negative spin on LeBron being the public face of what he's doing, because I think it's important. And I think it's a good example to other athletes mm-hmm. beneath him, like, oh, this is how I can really make an impact by actually doing. And so I'm in support of that. But I also don't want to ding Michael Jordan because he had a different approach. Because there's a lot of people that have a different approach to how they use their wealth to benefit others. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like to do it anonymously, behind the scenes. They like to stay in their lane. If Michael Jordan feels like, you know what, I'm not an expert on education, so therefore I'm not gonna put my face on something that has to do with education, I have no problem with that. I think both guys are, and again, I know less about what Jordan did, but I guarantee you he's got a case.
But look at Jordan. Who are Jordan's best friends? You ever notice this? He doesn't talk to Barkley anymore. He doesn't deal with Tiger. Michael Jordan's best friends are third-tier players who are LeBron's best friends, aren't they?
No, I want to defend. Mike's best friends may be his best friends, not right. public guys you play with. My best friends are all a bunch of Ball State football players that nobody would know. They're my best friends. I'm friends with a lot of people in the media, very good friends. But my best friends, Tim Walton, Todd Fennell, Ralph White, nobody would know them.
But why isn't Michael more part of the NBA community?
Because he's in a
he's an owner.
He's an owner, and he's...
So that separates that.
He's not close to Magic. He's not close to Bird. He's not close to Akeem. He's not close to LeBron.
But Magic
not,
and
all owners, wasn't close, all owners aren't close one, to everybody.
Yeah, and only thing, know, no, he was close to Barkley when they were playing. Charles Oakley's one of his closest friends. Still his closest friend. Charles is with him a lot. So I think Adolph, that is the in management position there at Charlotte, is also one of his closest friends. Mike has never been like that in regards to what I've known, being around Mike. The selected group of people he's been around, they're still around. That's who he leans on in times of need. That's who he leans on in time of trust. LeBron's and Charles Oakley's been there from the beginning.
LeBron's best friends are Maverick Carter and Rich Paul and Randy. You know, his boys. And Randy Mills.
I think that's part of it, too, with LeBron wanting to be the face. He has a team around him. And the social media era that we're living in now, Michael didn't have that back then. And I'm not sure if they were as much brand building as they are now. It seems like everybody's trying to build a brand. You have a team around you that's helping you build your brand. I'm not sure if Mike had that to the extent that LeBron. I'm quite sure he had it, but not to the extent that LeBron has it now.
Well, it was more singly focused on Nike.
Well, I mean, Mick Jagger's an entertainer. Bono's an entertainer and a global ambassador. They're just different. I mean, like, when I think of Michael, I think of Michael net worth 6 for 6 shoes. When I think of LeBron, I think of more of an ambassador of basketball.
Sort of like Muhammad Ali, right? When you think about Muhammad Ali, you think about all the things he did, the ambassador of being
a
boxer.
Yes, I have a
all the things
sense
he did
of...
around the world and being successful in the ring. He wasn't undefeated. He took some L's, but he's still the greatest of all time.
Welcome back. Jim Jackson's here, joined now by the founder of the Big Lead, Jason McIntyre. Let's return to the association where reportedly Draymond Green and Tristan Thompson got into a big nightclub fight after the ESPYs a couple of weeks ago. Why'd it take so long to leak, McIntyre? Jason here reporting, Draymond tried multiple times to apologize for their scrap during game one of the finals. Tristan responded by punching him in a mug. Whitlock, who looks worse, Draymond or Tristan?
I gotta go with Draymond. It's a tight one, but I'm gonna go with Draymond. He's been asking for this. He's been the bully of the league. He's talked crazy to multiple NBA players. And I just don't think, here's where I decide in favor of Tristan Thompson. I don't think at a party, when both parties could have been consuming alcohol, is the right time to, hey, I'm going to go apologize. Get the guy's number, text him, get on the phone beforehand. Do it when you're both sober, not some party event, not around a bunch of witnesses. You know, that can mess with a guy's testosterone. If his woman is there, friends of his are there, that could spark something. So I land on the side of Tristan Thompson. Draymond looks worse here.
Yeah, I mean, Draymond has a basketball brand. Tristan doesn't. Tristan has a dating brand. He doesn't have any endorsements. You know, a shoe deal. What's his basketball brand? He's the second best. He's the third best forward on the Cavs. Draymond has endorsements. Draymond's part of a dynasty. He's a part of American sports royalty.
So who looks worse in this fight?
Draymond. Then? Draymond's got stuff to lose.
He tried to apologize.
Well,
and got
yeah, but
and he
when you
worse?
Taunt a guy month after month, year after year, that's the downside to yapping. Draymond's got a basketball brand. This looks Bush League.
It does. And even if it wasn't his fault, it started back in the 2018 finals when they get into it. Tristan wanted to apologize. Draymond blew him off. So things have been lingering. You get to a party in the ESPYs. And to your point here, look, Draymond is on commercials. Tristan's not on commercials. Only time he was out there on a commercial or something on TV was TMZ. All right, when some stuff jumped off when he made a bad decision. But Draymond doesn't win this battle just because of his reputation on the court in regards to being a bully, kind of the tough guy, and this is what happened. So he's not going to get benefit of the doubt because we don't know what was said actually as he approached Tristan Thompson. To me, if I'm in a club and depending on how a guy walks up, I'm looking at his body language, okay? You may say something out your mouth, but the body language may be totally different, okay? And Tristan may have reacted to what he saw and what he felt more so than what Draymond actually had to say. And that just goes back to, again, the beef within. You just have to be smart. If you want to holler at him, pull him to the side, away from everybody, go outside, go somewhere else, get his number, talk to him. But to your point, at the ESPYs, man, they might have had a couple of drinks, yeah, people around, stuff is getting off. That was not the time to kind of do that. I just think that's not the time, and Draymond is going to get the blunt of the criticism.
Draymond looks awful here. I would agree with you, Whitlock. You know, it's a weak move when you publicly de-pants someone like he did in the finals after game 4. You know, Tristan went up to shake his hand. Draymond's like, I don't bleep with you. I mean, we got video from earlier in the series. Remember after the ejection, Draymond's talking all this trash. I mean, he says, hey, man, I'll meet him in the streets if you want to. I mean, you can't say that stuff and then privately go up to somebody and be like, hey, man, I'm sorry about that. That's just not cool. I don't, Jim, does that fly with you as a former player?
Well, if he figures out he's wrong and he wants to apologize, it takes more of a man to apologize when he knows he's wrong, okay? So maybe he's admitting that mistake, and I give Draymond credit for that if he is, but at the same time and place and how you do it and how you come across with that apology, I think sincerely is going to affect that other person.
I talked to a couple other players about this since it happened 2 weeks ago, and there's a big sense out there, hey, man, this guy's had it coming. You know, this guy deserves this. He's run his mouth for a couple years, Jim, and it's tough when you play the tough guy, because you keep saying this is a suburban team, and they're a soft team, they're a jump shooting team, and he's like the tough guy, and well, guess what? You know, tough guy's going to get served eventually.
I think where he really crossed the line, I think at their post-game parade,
yes,
he was talking smack, yep, and called him soft. In their victory celebration parade, it went from, hey, on the court, you say stuff that in the heat of competition. Here you are at your victory parade. Mm-hmm. Instead of celebrating, you're taking a shot at me and calling me soft. Eventually, at some point, someone was going to respond. Tristan Thompson did Charles Barkley a favor, who, remember, Charles during the season called for someone to take a shot at Draymond.
Listen, this is social media. Like, there's just certain places you don't go. Draymond has a brand. It's a basketball brand, but it's a tough guy brand. So when you have that brand and you go up to another tough guy and you taunt him publicly as part of a dynasty, what do you think Tristan's going to act like when we see each other two cocktails in at a club?
Here's the thing. He didn't think Tristan was that tough guy. See, you understand something. You know this about guys in neighborhood. One of my closest friends was really quiet. Okay? Didn't really mess with a lot of people. But when you push the wrong button, it was over. So a lot of times, bullies are going to bully people they know they can get away with. Draymond thinks he can get away with it with a lot of people, in particular, Tristan Thompson. This wasn't the case. It's certain people he's not going to woof at, okay? Charles Oakley is a great friend of mine. Xavier McDaniels is a great friend of mine. Derek Coleman is a great friend of mine. Those guys, a lot of people not challenging them. There's a reason why. Okay, there's a reason why a lot of people don't challenge
them. And let's add, Tristan Thompson had a brutal year. His wife issues, right? He got benched in Cleveland. It was ugly.
All right, welcome back. We're joined now by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini, longtime NFL player and scout Bucky Brooks. Let's move to the NFL, where apparently the drama in New England hasn't just been between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. According to a new book, there was actually major tension between Brady and Robert Kraft dating back to 2015, with the quarterback outraged that Kraft stopped fighting the Deflategate ruling and reportedly responded by, what the bleep? Cowherd, do you think Deflategate ignited the Patriots turmoil?
I don't. I think there's been a lot of drip, 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 drip in the faucet. There's been a multiple of things. Malcolm Butler's one of them. But I go back to Alex Guerrero, is that players now have a choice in that locker room for 3 years. It was always the Patriot way. Well, now it's the Patriot way, and there's the TB12 clinic. And if I was a young receiver, I'd want to befriend Brady. I'd want to go work out at the TB12 clinic because I get more touches. I'm a young running back. I kind of like to be in Tom's clinic because I get more touches. And I don't think it's a massive fissure, but we called it the Patriot way. That's been challenged. Kraft never challenged that. Tom is, by the way, Belichick came out. You're off the plane. You're off the sidelines. That felt, when he said that, I'm like, I don't even know who Alex Guerrero is. And I think there's a little fissure there.
What I find fascinating about this book excerpt is that Tom Brady felt abandoned by Robert Kraft on the Deflategate, according to this book. Then you had Bill Belichick during Deflategate say, you know what, that's a question for Tom. I'm not involved. So Tom Brady, to me, felt Kraft and Belichick let him down during Deflategate. And so I do believe this is at the root of everything that's happened since, is that Robert Kraft had to do a makeup with Tom Brady, and that's what led to the Jimmy Garoppolo decision. And these things have all just built off of Deflategate. And I read this, and I love Tom Brady, but I think he's wrong here. I think the Deflategate thing, I don't blame Robert Kraft for his decision. I don't blame Bill Belichick a little bit for his decision. Like, that's a Tom deal. Tom was the guy to me that needed to stand down during the Deflategate thing, and he couldn't let it go. And I do think it's had a ripple effect that's caused some tension.
I don't know where they got the quotes from this book. I don't know where they got the insiders for this book. It's hard for me to believe that they're getting direct quotes from Tom Brady on how he reacted to Robert Kraft's decision on Deflategate. Like, that's so hard to believe that someone's talking about that. In terms of the tension there, I can tell you that right now, nobody is in that locker room worried about any tension. Nobody is talking about any of the things that happened in the offseason. It just doesn't exist there. The only thing anybody's worried about is practice, and it's the next day of practice. There were times being in that building where there were a lot of things that were being said about the team. I remember when we let Lawyer Malloy go, and they said, it's over in the locker room, and they lost the team. And all. But it was being said, but nobody talked about it. Nobody cared about it. And everybody just put their head down and worked towards the next day, because that's just how it is.
You know, I think human emotions do factor into this. Like, it's a game, and they've operated a certain way for a long time. But Tom Brady, as the franchise player, certainly would like to feel like the owner and the head coach back him up. Regardless of whether he's right or wrong, you want some assurances to feel like all the sacrifice, all the things that I've done to help us win and be a perennial contender, that those things would be supported and reflected in the way that we go about our business. And so if he didn't feel like he was getting that support, I certainly could see where he would kind of feel like I'm out here on an island. It could change him kind of carrying on the message that has always been kind of dispensed.
Eric, I want to push back against something you said in terms of the reporting on this book. And again, I'm not as sure of anything, but the book basically says that Brady immediately called DeMorris Smith and the NFLPA and got on the phone with them. And so where they might be getting the information from is the NFLPA and sources there that are aware of how Brady reacted when Robert Kraft stepped down. And I agree with Bucky to the extent that Tom Brady wants to feel a level of support. And again, when you factor in all the things we've been talking about all offseason, how much less money he's taken throughout his career, he probably feels more entitled and emboldened than some. As it relates to Deflategate, though, I thought it was time to raise the white flag and for Brady to put it away. The NFL, Roger Goodell, was backed into a corner. He had to stand tough against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots because of all the other things that players thought they had gotten away with previously.
When you look at the situation, Tom Brady was there when Drew Bledsoe was traded to Buffalo. Tom Brady was there when Seymour was traded. Tom Brady has seen all the things that take place there, and there's a ruthless efficiency in that organization, and everybody who's part of it knows that they're part of it. So if you don't feel necessarily as appreciated as you hope to be, you're probably in the wrong spot if that's your mindset.
Oakland, where John Gruden's return to coaching, it's not off to the slickest start, with Khalil Mack holding out of camp and reportedly ducking the new Raiders coach. Now Gruden says the defense wasn't any good even when Mack was there last year, and reports have surfaced that Khalil and the team, they haven't had contract talks since February. Whitlock, is John Gruden mishandling Khalil Mack?
I don't know, because I really want to hear what Eric and Bucky Brooks have to say, because the way he's handling Khalil Mack says to me that, hey, Khalil, you've been a great player, but our defense hasn't been great with you here, so maybe you're not as valuable as you think you are. I find it fascinating, and it makes me wonder, but maybe the splash plays are there for Khalil Mack, but maybe he's unsound in other areas that I'm not aware of.
It does feel clumsy, doesn't it?
It does feel clumsy, but being with John Gruden back in 98, I was there his first season. Look, he's an offensive-minded guy. He wants all the bells and whistles on offense. It's about the quarterback and all the other stuff. And look, he wants the defense to play well, but really, his baby is the offense. And I think when you look at the way the league is trending, people are throwing the ball all over the yard. The money is saying that pass catchers and playmakers and quarterbacks get all the money. Maybe he doesn't see the value in paying a pass rusher quarterback money, especially when that defense is mired in the bottom third of the league. He may just have a tough time seeing Khalil Mack as a valuable option to really upgrade their
squad. In the last 10 years since Gruden has been gone, all athletes have been empowered. Forget social media. They make more money. One of the things I worried about with Gruden is it's not that he's going to forget plays. His schematically, John will figure it out. But generationally, he's been out of locker rooms for a decade. And if I would have gotten the job, everybody knows I'm John Gruden. I'm a quarterback guy. I would have reached out to Khalil Mack first to send a message. You know I love Derek Carr. I've talked about him on the air. Is it possible that a decade out of a locker room, there's a little generational? He doesn't quite understand the power of the athlete today?
Well, the way I understood it is he did reach out to Khalil Mack, and Khalil Mack didn't reach out back unless I've misread the way it's being presented. And I thought Odell Beckham did a great job this offseason in the sense that with the new administration, new head coach, new GM, he showed up to everything. He worked. He was in the meeting rooms. He was in the locker room. He showed them that there was a commitment on his part to be part of the new program moving forward. And he also showed them that the injury had healed and he could perform at a high level. The tone in New York changed dramatically on Odell Beckham. Why not, if you're Khalil Mack, go out to dinner with John Gruden. Show up a little bit. Let him see the person that you are. Spend some time with him. John Gruden's there for 10 years. He's got a 10-year contract and the ultimate amount of power. Instead of not returning calls, why not go spend some time and say, look, this is why you should invest in me, not just as a player, but as a human being, and this is how I'm going to make the team better.
You make a hell of a point, Eric. You just a hell of a point. I'm just sitting here thinking about, again, in any situation, business, football, basketball, any situation, when you want the kind of money that he wants, it can't just be, hey, turn my tape on, and that says it all. The ownership, the management, they have to feel good about you. Are you really with us? Are you a leader on this team? Or are you down with our vision? Then they feel comfortable. It's like, okay, we know you can play. We got the tape. But the kind of money he wants,
yes,
you got to play the whole political game.
So he brought up a really good point about Odell Beckham Jr. It's easy to fall in love with Odell Beckham Jr. when you see him on the field. You see the splash plays. And then your imagination starts to take over. Man, these are the things that we can do with him. If Khalil Mack shows up, minicamps, OTAs, the defensive coordinator, the head coach get a chance to see and feel him on the field, it's easy to be like, oh, okay, this is the guy that I want to hitch my wagon to for the next 4, 5, 6 years. By not returning the calls, by not being available, maybe John is like, look, we weren't very good with you. I may be able to find somebody else that can do the same things, and they also hold all the leverage, because with the fifth-year option, 2 franchise tags, Khalil Mack can't really go anywhere.
I do wonder a little bit, though. We're seeing what analytics is doing to everything. It's eliminated centers in the NBA. Are analytics a little bit of an enemy of defense? I mean, Deshaun Watson shows up to Houston, different franchise. J.J. Watt was there for 6 years. His best games, they lost. Are analytics telling coaches?
That's a strong statement.
Well, I mean, listen, Aaron Donald was unbelievable 5 years ago. Todd Gurley, Jared Goff show up. Robert Woods shows up. The Rams win 13 games.
Well, we know analytics isn't affecting Oakland because John said he's not going to use analytics. So it's not a part there. And just to go back on this point, if you're John Gruden, you're saying this guy is acting this way when we have the leverage. What is he going to do when he's got a ton of guaranteed money? That's another real big fear as you're sorting through this.
I'll say the last thing about Khalil Mack. I played in the Mid-American Conference. He played in the Mid-American Conference at Buffalo. He's such an amazing talent as a college player in that league that he's used to being kind of spoiled and pampered when you're that much better than everybody else. And you bring that mentality to the NFL, it just won't fly. And I know he's in his fourth or fifth year, or third or fourth year, but it sounds like he's mishandling this.
Welcome back, Eric Mangini and Bucky Brooks. Let's return to the National Football League, where the league's efforts to stop owners from talking about the anthem doesn't really seem to be working. First, Jerry Jones weighed in last week. Now Steelers owner Art Rooney is speaking out, saying everybody wants NFL players to stand, including most of the players themselves. Whitlock, do you think Rooney's right that a vast number of players just want to focus on football?
Yeah, I think it's 97.8% of players just want to play football, and I may be low there. I think there's 10 or 12 guys that this is an issue for. It's good for them building their brand and talking about. It's put some money in some organization, the Players Coalition, and Malcolm Jenkins has started. but the overwhelming majority of football players, they don't have a problem with the national anthem. They don't have a problem standing for the national anthem. This is a non-issue. A handful of players are holding the NFL hostage. I blame D'Amore Smith for allowing it and for going along with it. There's 1,700 NFL players. 12 of them care about this. And the NFLPA and NFL ownership is kowtowing to a dozen players.
Well, I agree with you, but I think this is the way it works everywhere, that the media, looking for clicks, takes those 12 players and amplifies their message on social media. If we didn't have social media, this story would just be kind of a niche story. But every day you turn on your phone, which is now where we book our restaurant reservations, our calendar, our alarm clock. So I think it's a very tiny number of players. By the way, in my life, the most successful people I've met in every industry are the most focused. They're not always the smartest. They're not always the wittiest or they're the most focused. You ever notice 99% of star players are not into the anthem? It's a lot of fringe guys. I mean, you notice. Yeah. I don't see Breeze, Brady, Andre
Russell
Whitworth,
Wilson.
Todd Gurley. It's a lot of guys who have put some of their focus off football. The great players in sports, especially the NFL, because football demands six times the practice than basketball. Batting practice lasts 40 minutes to an hour. Football practice every day is 3 hours. So football is a lot of work. Practice is hard. You have to memorize a playbook. If you have time for social stuff during a season, I don't think most great players do.
Not on game day.
And the locker room is such a cross-section of society. You've got white, you've got black, you've got East Coast, you've got West Coast, you've got every different religion, and you're
poor,
trying.
Poor, rich.
Yeah, you're trying as hard as you can to unify for a common cause against a common opponent. And you get to the point where you're just about to play a game, you're trying to get everybody to play at a high level and have something that divisive, it's extremely disruptive. And politics, discussing politics or religion, everybody has such strong views on it, it's hard to come to any consensus. We see it every single day, and to have that be the focus right before you kick off, it becomes impossible.
And Coach brings up a good point. It's hard to bring everybody together. So what eventually has to happen? Someone is going to have to wear the black hat and kind of drop the hammer and say, this is how it's going to be. And sometimes that's the head coach. Sometimes it comes from a higher up. But ultimately, players crave structure and discipline. And they'll whine and moan about stuff for a little bit. But if you make a hard line rule and says, look, this is how we're doing it, and that's that, everyone will comply. Eventually, it'll go to the back pages. And all the good that everyone is doing, that will end up being the spotlight and the focus as opposed to the other stuff. Because everyone is growing tired of talking about it. We went into the third year talking about this. Even Michael Bennett has talked about, look, it's about the actions and doing other stuff. Like, the knee is just a gesture. It is time to kind of move beyond this thing because it's really a cloud.
Especially when you see LeBron yesterday open a school. That's an action. It's great that you go on Twitter and you're empowered by the media. LeBron James is changing lives potentially at a school. Like, that's the stuff. Jalen Rose, who we used to work with. Jalen Rose is changing lives. He's not rushing to Twitter to be empowered. Like, I think a lot of the anthem now is like, I think players, even Bennett, are saying, okay, what's the end game here? Is it to change lives? Well, you're not doing that on Twitter. I don't even know if you can change opinion on Twitter. People come in. People on Twitter are looking for affirmation. They're not looking for information.
You can build your brand on Twitter. You can get retweets and likes. You can, again, one of the big problems, you can quarrel with the president over Twitter. And that's why, you know, the president needs to get off Twitter. But that's what I think it has become for a handful of NFL players, a way to quarrel with the president. And, again, it's not good for football. It's a distraction for football. Eventually, it's going to hurt the players' bottom line economically. It's a mistake. All right, to Philadelphia, where Carson Wentz is in training camp working towards a return from the knee injury that cut his MVP caliber year short. But Doug Peterson isn't sure the quarterback is ready yet, saying, quote, he senses a little hesitation out of Wentz, but that it's more in his head than in his knee. Cowherd, are you worried about Wentz this season?
No, I mean, just think of this. Brady missed a year. Big Ben's been hurt. Breeze the shoulder. This past year, Garoppolo's missed time with injuries. Luck missed the year. Deshaun Watson missed the year. Aaron Rodgers missed the year. Andrew, quarterbacks over 15 years get hurt. It's Peyton Manning had surgeries. I struggle to think Steve Young ran around and got. Brett Favre was an exception. He was you know, Mr. Durability. Eli Manning's been an exception. By and large, quarterbacks miss time, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I do think a knee injury, though, a lot of times, it takes a full year to recover. And then you have to be out there playing on it for an extended period of time before you're back to who you really are. And that's what I hear maybe from Doug Peterson is, man, it may be a minute before Carson Wentz is the same MVP caliber Carson Wentz.
I'm not surprised that there's hesitation on his part. I think anybody who gets injured and then has to come back and perform at a high level or perform at any level is going to be cautious. And is it pain or is it re-injury? Is it, you know, is this movement okay? You've got to go through that whole process. And when you're a young guy and when you're dealing with it for the first time, it's even that much more of a concern. But he'll work through that. He'll learn as he goes. And I think at the end of the day, he'll be fine.
You know, having suffered an injury, a torn ACL my rookie year, going into my second season in training camp with a knee brace, trying to figure it out, there is some hesitation because the doctors can tell you everything is okay, but until you're able to play in a game and get hit on it and move around and do some of the things that you could do prior to the injury, you don't have that full confidence. I also think another thing that could be at play, look, Carson Wentz sat on the sideline and watched Nick Foles win a Super Bowl. There's a little bit of him that wants to rush and make sure that he lets everybody know, this is my job, this is my team. And even though there's not a competition inside, there's a little bit of insecurity that, look, this guy won the biggest game on the biggest stage in my job. I want to get back and reclaim my spot.
Plus, if Carson Wentz watched this show, Nick Foles is better than Carson Wentz. According to you, you had him as a franchise quarterback.
No, let's be clear. I said Nick Foles should have gone out and sought starter salary somewhere. He should be a starter somewhere. As Mangini can tell you, I put a gold jacket on Carson Wentz.
I was just 3 weeks to say that. You've been in love for Carson Wentz for a long time.
From day one. But I think Bucky does have a legitimate point that if someone had just won a Super Bowl and just been the MVP of the Super Bowl that's on my roster, I would be a little bit nervous and apprehensive and not as
comfortable. Well, he's a pocket quarterback, but Carson,
he moves.
His athleticism is a part of his arsenal, and I can see the play. He scrambles right, leaps into the end zone. You watch your leg. He's seen the play.
But one of the other problems with him is he took a lot of chances, and he was getting hit at a rate
that was
much higher than everybody else. Maybe this injury will help him make some better business decisions where you don't take a hit for a five-yard completion. It's the same problem that Andrew Luck faces
as
he comes back from this injury. This could be a blessing in disguise in terms of him starting to appreciate this is a good time to take a hit. This is worth it versus I'm not going to get blown up for a two-yard completion. Well, that remains to be seen, but a lot of effectiveness is your ability to play at all. And if you're constantly putting yourself at risk by trying to make these short completions and getting hit,
By and large, it feels like to me, like even great quarterbacks like Russell Wilson, it takes about 3 years to really establish a sense that you own the line of scrimmage compared to like a Breeze or a Matt Ryan. Wentz, these guys that can run, Deshaun, Wentz, Luck, Wilson, as they're growing into comfortable pocket quarterbacks, they use the athletic ability to pick up yards, pick up first downs. The injury, to Eric's point, does it make you go, okay, I gotta get better in the pocket? Because Russell Wilson took a couple pops, and suddenly year three, the light went on. He was a significantly better pocket thrower.
All right, welcome back. Time for Last Call. Let's move to San Francisco, where Richard Sherman got torched yesterday in training camp by 49ers receiver Marquise Goodwin. Cowherd, after watching that, are you worried that the once dominant Sherman has lost several steps?
Well, he was never a burner. He was always a vulnerable corner if you put him in the slot. He is long. He is physical. He's smart. He understood the angles. But he's never been a guy with breakaway speed.
He has ankle weights on there, Cal.
Well, he was never Darrell Revis as a complete corner. You could put Darrell anywhere. Richard Sherman's Owens played the angles, played length, was a bully at the line of scrimmage. This is not, if you give him a little space, he's never been a runner.
He looks old there.
He is old. And he's off an ACL.
Yeah, I that was not a good look for Richard Sherman. No wonder he's running his mouth, because he can't run anything
else. Oh, come on.